And now for something completely different.
Welcome back to episode 38 of Chat with a Cat. This is being recorded after the simming of games 3 and 4 of the finals of the 1989-1990 season. It's, at least as of when I started recording this, there is no draft thread up, so this is still a draft preview rather than a draft review. Possible that changes between now and the time I post this, but at least what I'm going off of is a preview. I should note that there was one trade posted prior to me starting this in that the Mavericks traded away the number 14 pick to the Hornets for cash considerations. I'm using air quotes, which works great on a podcast, basically for points. So with that, I would like to dive in, and I'm going to do this in kind of a mock draft style because I think that's the most compelling way to talk about both the teams and to talk about the players. I'm only going to do the first 20 or so picks, and the reason for that is this draft only goes 20 players deep in terms of green potential or above. I think once you get into the yellow potential players, it is something of a crapshoot, and I don't think, quite frankly, the teams at the back of the lottery need much of my help in suggesting what they do anyway. So with all of that out of the way, let's go ahead and get started. The first overall pick in the draft goes to the Golden State Warriors. Even though it's not official, we know that they are looking at taking Gary Payton. The caveat I would have for the Warriors is we know the Warriors basically have Sean Kemp, maybe you say they have Wayman Tisdale, and nothing else. Gary Payton is the highest potential player in the draft. He is the number one pick. He should be the number one pick. The problem with Gary Payton is he has an inside rating of 25, and he has an inside potential of A, which means he's at least six training camps away from reaching his potential. Or, if you prefer, six training camps and or paid trainings away if you want to accelerate the process. What this means is that Gary Payton is not likely to become his fully formed self until he is on his second contract. And as I've talked about in previous Chat with the Cats, one of the real keys in team building is finding ways to get production on the cheap. And in the past, you would have expected a number one pick to give you production on the cheap. A great example is David Robinson this past season. He gave an enormous amount of production on very little contract. The problem with Payton is, while he looks like he's already pretty advanced defensively, offensively, he's super, super raw. Might even average 10, 12 points a game this season. He's not going to be a 20-point scorer for several seasons. And so you're not going to be able to get value out of him. And because of that, if the Golden State Warriors' plan is to continue to be bad for a couple more seasons and continue accumulating pieces, it means they're not going to be able to turn the corner and start being competitive until they're having to pay all of their guys big money. And once you have to start paying all of your guys big money, you have to start choosing whom you're losing. It's one of the reasons that you can't be a bad team forever, is because eventually you have to pay your players, and you don't want to be paying when you're a bad team. You want to be paying when you're a good team. And if you're a team that has built up solely through the draft, at that point you're going to have a hard time keeping everyone, and your other GM toolbox has to come into play. So my recommendation to the Warriors would be this. Yes, build around Kemp. Yes, build around Payton. Perhaps next season's draft pick, if it's a high 1-2-3 pick, you can build around that. But really what the the goal ought to be on the go forward for the Warriors is start accumulating young players that are productive now on modest contracts. Maybe even, you know, you trade away a draft pick in the future for a 23, 24-year-old who's productive, even if he's on a bigger contract. And the reason you do that is that keeps them on the Payton and Kemp timeline in terms of when they will mature, but it also gives you the opportunity to have a squad that is giving you production now as you wait for them to mature. It's kind of a tough row to hoe, but that would be my recommendation. Is Golden State can't just sit around and wait for Payton and Kemp to get better. They need to build the team around them before they get to the point where they are commanding max money, because if you don't have those ancillary pieces around them already when they start commanding max deals, you don't have the cap flexibility to go and get those pieces anymore. So there's a period in team building where you bottom out and you've cleared your books and you've got your 2-3 superstars on their rookie deals. That's the time to accumulate the talent around them, so that when they get off their rookie deals, you have bird rights, you have ways to keep those guys surrounded by talent. So that is the stage that, not this draft, because this draft they're picking up Payton, but in the future that Golden State is going to be in. The number two pick, again, there was not a lot of drama in the lottery, goes to the Knicks. I talked briefly about the Knicks when I was looking over the Eastern Conference. To me, their two big pieces are Derek McKee, who I said and still will say is really more of a shooting guard, and Dan Majerle, who's a small forward. I think, you know, for the Knicks, they've got an aging Herb Williams, they've got an aging Bill Cartwright that are sucking up a lot of money in the front court, quite honestly. But I think, you know, Herb Williams is expiring. They can get prepped for the future and get young front court depth. And really, there's only, you know, there's four blue potential players, so those are whom they're looking at. There's three wings and one big. And so I think it makes it pretty easy to guess that, assuming there's no trades, New York is going to go for Derek Coleman. And they should. Coleman is, he's not a fully formed product, but he's much closer than Payton is offensively. I think he can step in and he could probably put up 15 points and maybe 8 rebounds a game now and just get better from there. He's certainly the best big man prospect in this draft. And the other thing that I think is interesting with DC is that he is a three-point shooter. Now, McKee is not a great three-point shooter. He's okay for power forward. If you move him down to where I think he belongs, which is more the shooting guard spot, he's not a great three-point shooter. But Majerle is a great three-point shooter. So I wonder if the Knicks, with Derek Coleman manning the middle, might consider starting to build up, you know, we keep hearing about it and nobody has successfully done it yet, building up the three-point shooting team that we all anticipate is eventually going to come as three-pointers become more prevalent. But this gives them a solid foundation. It kind of replaces the Buck Williams, Roni Cicely, big men that they've lost. Hopefully this time they keep a little bit tighter hold on Derek. I will be honest, I was not a big fan of Derek Coleman in real life. I thought he was a bit lazy and I thought he was soft. But the Sim League version of Derek Coleman projects to be an all-star level big man. And statistically, Derek Coleman was good. I didn't think he was a quote-unquote winner. Which is kind of a weird way of describing players, but, you know, whatever. So that's where I think the Knicks are going to go. I think they will go for the one really high-grade big man in this class, and they will be happy about it. The third pick was the only flip that happened during the lotto, the 76ers and the Bullets flips. The 76ers will be on the clock. And what they are going to be looking at is basically three players that are all mostly the same, but each has a different specialty. Kendall Gill is a little more ready-made defender. Cedric Ceballos is a little more ready-made rebounder. And Mario Elie is a little more ready-made shooter. And, you know, they're all 6'5 to 6'7, so I know the kids are probably laughing at that. They're really, it's more or less the same player with, you know, one attribute that's out, and it's just a different attribute on each of them. And so I mentioned when I was going over the 76ers that I think they would be well served to try to find a way to slide Kiki Vandeweghe back down from power forward to small forward, given that there are no true power forwards on the board, but Cedric Ceballos and his rebounding ability can, I won't say approximate a power forward, but can give you a speed-based power forward. I think Ceballos is probably the pick here. At least for me, that's where I would go if I were Gary, because he gives you a look that's a little bit tough to match up with. And I think because of that, Ceballos probably should be the pick. He also gives you, once Kiki Vandeweghe retires or gets traded, moves on, whatever it is, starts to decline, he gives you somebody that you can naturally slot in behind Vandeweghe at your small forward spot when you bring in a true power forward. So that would be my thought as to who is going to go at number three. Number four is the Bullets. They're already on the clock. Or not on the clock. They've got the pick on the block. I think it's an interesting conundrum for them to be in. The only guys really they can afford to pick are Gil and Ellie, who are both 6'5 shooting guards. But when you look at their roster, most of their young talent is at small forward and shooting guard. And they've had everybody on the team on the block for a couple of seasons now. I don't think they see either of these guys as a true build-around piece. So if I were Gil or Ellie, I wouldn't get comfortable here. I do think there's an opportunity if someone wants them to trade into number four. However, for the sake of argument here, I'm going to have to assume that the Bullets keep the pick. And if the Bullets do wind up keeping the pick, I think they go, I mean, it's a tough call, but I think they probably go with Mario Ellie, simply because scoring is an attribute that you can show people immediately. And while his inside scoring is a little bit underdeveloped compared to Gil, his three-point shooting and his jump shots are very, very good. And I know the Bullets are big fans of athleticism, and on the athleticism front, Ellie's just a little bit better. So that is my anticipation of which way that coin toss would go. I think it goes in favor of Ellie and that he would wind up going to Washington. I don't think he should get too comfortable there. Again, I think Washington is still in the mode of trade away everybody, accumulate assets. Maybe they like Kenny Smith among the players they got, but I would be surprised if anybody not named Kenny Smith is a piece they see as a part of their long-term plans. And also Mike Lowry has shown that he is quite willing to trade players away if the deal is right. So even Kenny Smith probably should not be getting too comfortable. The Bullets have five picks in the next two drafts. They've got a second pick in this draft as well. So they're hoarding assets. Right now it's quantity over quality, and they're probably looking at some point to convert it the other way. But given that, and again, given the way Mike Lowry has his taste, I do think Ellie would be the better pick here, which takes us to the Jazz. I think the Jazz are actually pretty happy. I mentioned in my Western Conference review that Anthony Bowie has just not been it for them at the small forward / shooting guard spot. And I think that's a hole on their roster that they will be happy to fill by taking Kendall Gill. They would have been happy with any of Ceballos, Ellie, or Gill. So the Jazz are really in a spot where I don't think they're going to be inclined to move their pick. No matter who they get, they're going to get a piece that fits. They're going to be able to slot this player in almost immediately. They've got a nice young core. You know, Otis Thorpe is only 27, Hot Rod Williams 27, Willie Anderson 23. So only John Sunvold at 28 isn't on that same timeline. And, you know, that he's not that far away from the rest of them. So this seems like an easy pick. Whoever is the last blue left is going to go to the Jazz. And this is where I think we see a significant drop off in the draft class quality, not just because you're going from blue potentials to green potentials, but because you're going from players that for the most part have, you know, one or two holes in their game, or you're going to have to wait one or two years for them to come into their own. They don't have anything that's significantly weak for their position. You know, obviously a point guard's not going to be a great rebounder, a center's not going to be a great passer, but these guys are players that are not going to be problematic based on the slots where they project into. I think there is a little bit of a step down here when you go from pick five to pick six, but I don't think it's maybe quite as significant as everybody thinks. And the player that I think will go at number six, the Simputer thinks it's going to be D. Brown. I kind of disagree with that. And the reason I disagree with that is the Atlanta Hawks have got already a very good point guard in Sherman Douglas. They've got Reggie Theus, who's an older guy, but can probably fill it up. They've got Reggie Miller. They've got Glenn Rice. They've got three-point shooters. And then they've got two aging bigs in Bill Laimbeer and Cliff Robinson. You would think I would say they're going to go for a big, but I don't think that's the case. I think they're actually going to try to quadruple down on three-point shooting. I think they go and grab Dennis Scott. Dennis Scott is the most three-point ready player in the draft. And at 6'8", he's got enough size to give them a kind of a small ball four. And I think Atlanta is willing to, we talked about this a little bit with the Knicks. I think they're willing to experiment a bit, trying to win. And maybe that means going with the first team that has multiple three-point shooters. If you have Reggie Miller and Glenn Rice, and I guess Bill Laimbeer to a certain extent, and Dennis Scott, that gives you a team where four of the five positions have to be respected from three. And the last of those is Sherman Douglas, who should be able to drive inside and kick it out and spray it around to those three-point shooters. So I think this could be a very interesting build. I wouldn't be surprised if they go after one of the big men on the board, and we'll get to those in a minute. But I do think Dennis Scott is probably the best among the remaining players after you get through the Blues. He's probably the best among the Greens. Next up would be the Indiana Pacers, and they're probably annoyed at this point that Dennis Scott went, because they have a strong front court. They have Muggsy Bogues in the back court. They've got Kerr and Petrovic at their wings. What they lack is a true small forward, and Dennis Scott would have been certainly an interesting small forward, a three-point threat for these interior guys to kick out to. But with him off the board, I think, and again, this is based on fit, I think what they're looking at is three things. They're looking at Lionel Simmons, who's a small forward that is, he's kind of average all around. He's basically a C player all around. But what he does have that is unique in this draft class is he's ready defensively right now. He's got a 52 post defense, a 55 perimeter defense, a 61 steal, a 52 block shot. He's not going to be a great defender, but he is a decent defender at small forward who can slide up to guard power forwards. He can slide down to guard shooting guards. So he's versatile. They're probably also asking themselves, what about Danny Ferry? Can he be a discount version of Dennis Scott at the small forward system or at the small forward position? I think Terry Mills is another guy that's interesting. He's listed as a power forward, but he's another three-point shooter, maybe a little better offensive rebounder than some of the other guys. But that size from the three position could be intriguing as well. When you line all those up for me, I honestly think, based on what I have seen from Paulie, is he tends to follow some of the same trends, I think, that I do. And I would not be surprised, quite honestly, to see him go with Terry Mills in this spot. I think the size And I think the ability to knock shots down from three is something that the Pacers will find intriguing. He gives them the option of putting a stretch four on the floor. And he's already got great three-point shooters in Ricky Berry, Drazen Petrovic, and Muggsy Bogues and Steve Kerr. So he could try to – well, maybe not Muggsy Bogues, but Steve Kerr. So he could try to come up with a three-point shooting team as well. But what Mills definitely gives you is unusual size. And again, listed a power forward, I think he plays small forward if he comes to the Pacers. And I think the Pacers would be happy to break teams a little bit in that way by using a lot of three-point shooting. Next up is the Trailblazers. The Trailblazers have youth at most positions. They have depth at most positions. But what we do have is we do have three players that are entering free agency. Now, I'm not worried about seeing Johnny Newman in free agency because he's restricted. I can match that. So what I am worried about is James Worthy and LaSalle Thompson. And what I'm worried about if I bring back Worthy is, are we undersized at center? What I worry about if I bring back LaSalle Thompson is, where do we get our points from on offense? So which one am I more worried about? I think I'm a little more worried about the rebounding and the presence that has been brought to us by LaSalle Thompson. And this is a reach pick, admittedly, but I'm going to put it out there. I like Tyrone Hill at number eight. And the reason that I like him is he's got 80s in offensive and defensive rebounding. He's got no offensive game whatsoever, but I think we have enough scoring to offset that. And I like the idea of continuing to have a strong rebounder in the line of Kurt Rambis, in the line of Kevin McHale, in the line of LaSalle Thompson. Hopefully I don't have to use him, but you know, the other big men choices here are Eldon Campbell, who is just as bad, maybe worse offensively right now, maybe has a little higher ceiling, but does and is a little better shot blocker, but has none of the rebounding ability that Tyrone Hill has. Maybe Felton Spencer. Felton is another guy who's very raw offensively, is a little better on the defensive end, but I like Tyrone Hill just a little bit better. And Jason Williams, who I think could, you know, he and Felton Spencer are very similar to me. Felton Spencer is a little better offensive rebounder and defender right now. I think Jason Williams probably has a bit of a higher ceiling. It's going to take longer to get there. But I think Tyrone Hill is the most ready-to-go player, provided you don't need offense. And again, I think we have the offensive chops to have a fully dedicated defender on the team. That's who I would go for as my insurance policy, really, for LaSalle Thompson. Next up is, again, the Bullets. This is coming from the Lakers pick. And, you know, we just saw the Bullets grab Mario Elie and be happy about it. At this point, I think they're going to go big man. And I suspect that they're going to follow the advice of, quote unquote, the board. And they're probably going to grab Eldon Campbell rather than Jason Williams or Felton Spencer. Eldon Campbell, as we just discussed, he has a nice offensive ceiling, but it's going to take him a little bit of time to get there. He's got a good shot blocking right out of the gate. Athleticism is good, which I know is a big plus for the Bullets. Handles and passing, not great, but yeah, he's probably going to play center for you, so you probably don't need that. I think he'll probably be on the block as soon as he's drafted, but, you know, that's the way it goes. Next up is the Mavericks at number 10. They traded away pick 14, which tells me that they're really only looking to fill one hole at this point. I mentioned again on my Western Conference review, they've got Sam Bowie, they've got Byron Scott, and I think this is the point where D. Brown is somebody that they have to look at because he's, again, according to the mock draft, he should be the top player that you're looking at. The problem with D. Brown is he is a bit of a shooting guard in a point guard's body. He's listed as a point guard, but his handles and passing are both in the 40s. His potentials are B and C there, which is fine. But I think if I'm the Mavericks, I'm really looking for more of a true point guard to get the ball to Bernard King and Bowie and Byron Scott. I'm not going to displace Bernard King right now with his salary. So they could go with a big man here, but considering that Campbell and Mills just came off the board, Campbell and Hill just came off the board. Hill's, yeah, close enough. I think they're going to look a little bit deeper, and I really think the place they're going to grab is they're going to grab Bimbo Coles. And the reason I say that is Coles is the only player on the board other than, you know, maybe Payton that projects as a good floor general right away. Maybe not a great floor general, but a good floor general. He won't take a lot of shots from their guys. He has the passing and ball handling skills to manage an offense. And so I think Coles is the pick, mostly because of fit. And I'm going to stick with that. I think, you know, they probably consider D. Brown strongly, but I don't think they pulled the trigger simply because he would be kind of redundant with Byron Scott. Next up is the Nuggets. The Nuggets already have a couple of good young point guards in McMillan and Grant. I can see them, you know, their guards situation at shooting guard is Danny Ainge and Ennis Watley. I don't know if that's great. They've got their small forward. They've got their power forward in Ronnie Cicely. They've got their center in Clifford Robinson. So this is a team with a hole at the shooting guard position, at least as far as the future. Danny Ainge is still good for now, but he's going to age out soon. And so this is the team that I think is looking at D. Brown and thinking, oh, if he falls to us, that will be perfect. We'll make him an undersized shooting guard. The other shooting guard options here are Marcus Liberty, who's kind of well-rounded but doesn't do anything great, and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a.k.a. Chris Jackson, who is just kind of a light version of D. Brown. So if you're going to pick, you may as well pick the real thing. So for me, the pick here for the Nuggets is D. Brown. I think, you know, he stops his slide after coming down from being projected at six by the mock draft. And I really think the reason he hadn't gone earlier is just mostly fit. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a talent deficit. He may be more talented than some of these other guys. I just think, you know, when you're into green potential players, that's the point where you look at fit a little more than talent. When you're in blue potential players, you draft the best talent and figure it out. But with green, you know, these are guys that are only going to be starters in a pinch or on a bad team. Eventually, they're going to be moved on. So this is where fit is more important, I think, than talent. So next up would be the Rockets. I think the Rockets are going to get auto-picked. Sorry, was that out loud? We haven't seen much of 78. He does come in and occasionally throw curveballs in the draft, like picking Frank Johnson. But I think at this point we can expect an auto-pick. And so when I look at who does the computer have in the mock draft that is at the top of the list, it's Jason Williams. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad pick for Houston. Williams, again, is raw, but he's not going to be asked to contribute on that roster immediately. They've got Patrick Ewing. They've got Hank McDowell for now. They've got Larry Bird probably for another season. They played Rod Higgins last year, and I've spoken before how I don't really agree with that choice, but he's certainly much better than Jason Williams right now. But they've got enough depth there for at least another year to give Jason a year to just sit on the bench and get better and be prepared to come in two seasons. So that's how I see that going. And again, it's mostly on the strength of, you know, this is a pick that is likely to be auto-picked, and that's who the computer seems to think is the best player. So next up, we come around to the Jazz again. Now, with their earlier pick, they kind of filled their hole at shooting guard. Now they're in a position where they can pick for best player available if they want to. And if I'm looking at best player available right now, I think the choice is probably Felton Spencer. He's not great offensively, but he's athletic. He rebounds. He defends. And there's something to be said for a player that has a specific role. I think he's also a good change of pace guy. When you look at Rick Smits, Smits is he is a little more of an offensive-minded player. And so, you know, Spencer gives you the option to back him up with a player that gives you a little bit of change of pace without being too disruptive to your game plan. He's not going to take shots away from other people. So I think that is probably the way Utah leans on their second time around. Also, Felton Spencer is the last real quality big man on the board. And so I think, you know, that's probably why he gets picked. Because the Jazz probably figure if we really want somebody else, they're going to be there at 16 when we pick again. So we now go to the Hornets pick. I know I mentioned I noticed at the beginning of my podcast that there was a trade. The Mavericks traded number 14 to the Hornets. And the Hornets are in an interesting position. Everybody knows. They've made it very clear. They've got Vlade Divac. They've got Hersey Hawkins. Those are their building blocks. They have Jay Vincent and Spud Webb under contract, but I don't think they see those as long-term pieces. I also don't think anybody on the board at this point is in a position to knock those guys out of contention. So I think what the Hornets should be looking for is a player that, with the proper training camp blessing, has the potential to to turn into something really, really good. And here, I think, is where I'm struggling with this. But I think it's Lionel Simmons. I discussed Lionel Simmons earlier, and I think Lionel has enough offensive skills right now to be decent as a two or a three. His defense makes him versatile. He looks like he's close to fully formed, and so he's not going to get a ton better. He's still got, B potential in inside shooting, so that's got a ways to go up. But everything else looks like it's probably close to potential. But one training camp boost takes a guy with, potentials in the 50s and 60s, and it's hard to tell with that B potential and inside. Maybe that's as high as a 70. It was probably 60s. But, obviously, given that he's currently got, 40s, high 40s and 50s in most of his currents, those C potentials that he's rocking are probably right at that level. Imagine him getting a boost in TC, and now you're looking at a guy with high 60s, 70s across the board. He's a player that I think is a player that you hope gets better. With a TC boost, if not at 14, it's not really that bad. But if he does, Nick is going to look like a genius for making this pick. So I think Lionel Simmons is the guy that you pick here, simply because he's the one guy left on the board that, if training camp gods decide to bless him the right way, has the ability to pop. Next up is the Phoenix Suns. They have their double big and John Stockton group going. So they are probably looking for a piece on the wing. The problem is the pickings are getting pretty slim. Marcus Liberty is Lionel Simmons, but kind of worse across the board, maybe a little taller. But I don't see him as ready to go as Simmons is. You've got Dwayne Coswell, who's a center. I mean, sure, but he's no great shakes, and you've already got two guys ahead of him that you're not going to move off. Loy Vaught is he's a backup power forward. Let's call it what it is. Tony Smith is a backup guard. Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf is an undersized shooter. But that leaves me staring at one guy, and that's Danny Ferry. Now, Ferry he's not a good defender. He's not a great offensive player. What he is a three-point bomber. And I can imagine that fit next to John Stockton driving and kicking and Brad Doherty and Karl Malone posting and kicking, where Ferry could become that long-range sniper that helps unlock the rest of the team. I don't think he's a long-term solution. I think he's a guy that Phoenix would really like to replace sooner rather than later. But I can see him being the selection here simply because he has a skill that fits well with what Phoenix has and that who isn't going to necessarily drag them down, let's say. So that takes us to pick number 16, where we're back around to the Jazz. And I mentioned I thought last time Utah would take Felton Spencer because they figured there would be some wings available. I think the last couple of picks have probably disappointed them a little bit in that sense. But I think at this point they look at the board and they decide to go with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Similar to the pick of D. Brown, I think they realize that he's not really a point guard. He's more a shooting guard in a point guard's body. And again, he does have one marketable skill, that's shooting threes. I'm a little bit concerned with the rest of his game, but when you're down at this level, picking a player that can at least contribute somewhere, that's got to be a win. Next up is the Pacers at number 17. We already talked a little bit about the Pacers. They've got bigs. They've got their wings. They were looking for a small forward. When we had them coming through, we had them picking up Terry Mills. I think at this point they're going to draft a little more traditionally here. And I actually see them going for Marcus Liberty because Marcus Liberty is a shooting guard with excellent size. And I think he was somebody that they were probably looking at and thinking about when they picked up Mills. And so this way you kind of hedge your bets. Whichever one of them pops, whichever one of them gets blessed in TC, that's the one you run with. And then you let things go. And there's something to be said for the idea of when you cannot pick quality, you pick quantity. If you have a hole on your roster and you can't get someone that you like to fill it, if you can get two or three young guys that don't quite fill it, but with the right TC could, and then you wait and you see which one of them TC blesses with a jump and that makes the decision for you, that's a legitimate way of going about things. I think one thing that, you know, people love looking at TC jumps and getting excited about it. But I think there's a way, even though they're random, to kind of plan around them and play for them. Because you figure, from everything I've seen, there's about a 1 in 12 chance that you get a TC boost to a particular player in any given season. There's about a 1 in 6 chance that you get a TC smite. And so, if you go and do the math there, there's roughly, you know, let's say you keep a player for 6 years, there's a little worse than a 50% chance that that player is going to get a jump, a boost in his first 6 years. There's about a 1 in, well, let's say a 30% chance that he gets a boost on his rookie deal. So if you have 3 players on rookie deals, the odds are about 3 to 4, so 3 out of 4 times, 75%, that you're going to see at least one of them take at least one boost before their rookie deal is done. So if you have a hole that you're trying to cover and you have the patience, you can take multiple players that are close to what you want and wait for the TC gods to boost them into a passable starter or perhaps the kind of player that can fill the hole you're looking for. And that's what I would anticipate we're going to see here with the Pacers. There's nobody that they love, but they'll get a couple of players they can tolerate. We're coming back to the Warriors. And we talked about the Warriors up front, that they're going to have to be very patient with Kemp and with Payton. There's probably going to be some temptation to trade this pick because this pick does not immediately give them help. And I think that's the wrong tack to take here. I think what you need to do is you need to find some ways to protect Payton and to protect Kemp and give them young teammates that will improve with them. And so the big question that you probably want to look at is, you know, the players that are left are not great. Who has the potential to improve the most? And I think if I'm looking at that, I think the answer there is Loy Vaught. Loy Vaught is kind of an interesting player in real life. I felt that he was maybe the fourth best forward on the Clippers, and then they traded everybody else away, and then he had some great seasons because somebody has to score the ball, somebody has to get the rebounds. But if you look at Vaught, as he exists right now, we've got a couple of D potentials in perimeter defense and passing, which are fine for a power forward. He's got C's and D's everywhere else except three-point shooting. Again, it's power forward, three-point shooting, who cares? And so he's also got some good rebounding already with 77, 66, and B potentials. So, and he's a good defender in the post for what he is. Now that, you know exactly what his potential is because he's got a rating of 60 and a potential of C, and the maximum rating you can have that's still a C is a 60. So you know he's not going to get any better at his defense or at his post defense. But where he does have a lot of room to improve is in steals and blocks. He's got C potentials there, and he's got 13 and 33. So he's got a lot of room to grow in steals, and he's got some room to grow in blocks. Similarly, on his inside, he's got a 38, and he's got a C rating. So he's at least got 3 points to grow. Could be 23. You don't know. So this is a player that on the rebounding and defensive side helps you right away and has the ability to grow a little bit as your team gets older. So I think, based on that, that is probably the best option available to the Warriors as they're trying to put pieces in place. And again, you're not trying to get stars in place. You're trying to get rotation pieces in place. And I don't think Loy, you know, he'll be a starting power forward on a bad team. He's not going to start ahead of camp. But he could definitely be a guy that you use, you know, if camp starts at center, you can use him at power forward, at least in the short term, until you get something better. And so I really think that Vaught is a good fit, you know, based on what's left. I mean, it's basically what, Dwayne Coswell, Tony Smith, and a bunch of yellows. Yeah, Vaught is definitely the way to go for the Warriors. Next up is the Supersonics. This is a team that is probably going to sell this pick. And the reason why is they're a win-now team. They're in their prime. They don't have time to wait for this pick to develop. And they really don't have a need at center. I know they're losing Moses Malone to the end of his contract, but they've got Will Perdue. They've got Danny Shays. They've got guys that can step in. I guess Danny Shays is expiring as well, but you figure they're going to be able to bring back at least one of those guys. So Dwayne Coswell is not going to sniff the center position. On the other hand, Tony Smith, he's not going to be ahead of Rex Chapman. He's not going to get ahead of Clyde Drexler. He's not going to get a sniff at the shooting guard position either. So this is a pick that is very much going to be based on, or it's very much going to be available. I think, you know, this is something where they're going to want to try to flip it for immediate help. If they can't, they'll take the guy that is most ready to go right now. And I think that is probably Dwayne Coswell. Coswell is an offensive liability, but he's an excellent defender, whereas Tony Smith doesn't really have any great attributes yet. So Coswell almost has to be the pick if Seattle keeps it. But again, this is a pick that I will be shocked if it stays in Seattle. I think they really want to get something now. Finally, we got pick 20. That's going to the Bucks, who look like, you know, at least as of the time of this recording, when I last checked, I haven't gone back to look. They were down 3-1 in the finals, so they're probably about to lose the finals. They're probably going to take Tony Smith just as a draft chip. He's not going to play. Anybody they take is not going to play on this squad, barring horrendous injuries. So this one really doesn't matter. And again, I've said before, Quayle has won more games than anybody, including me. He doesn't really need my advice. But if I were a betting man, I would bet that he probably takes Smith ahead of any of the yellow potentials. There's just not anybody here that really scratches my itch as, you know, oh, this is a guy that could be a sleeper pick. And at that point, you know, we're left with the Knicks, the Kings, the Lakers, and the Celtics, all of which are going to be picking players that, you know, you might see them have a Linsanity week or two where they get a sniff of the floor just because somebody's trying something funky, or maybe because somebody's trying to tank. But that's kind of the way I see it going is, you know, it really doesn't matter. There's not a lot of value in me discussing, you know, who the picks are. Once we get into the yellows, they're all blending together. And we know a lot of these guys are going to wind up getting cut in favor of more highly rated free agents. So there you have it. There's the draft preview. The one thing that I think will be interesting to see, and I mentioned this in my reviews, is we're seeing drafts where players are coming in very, very raw. There's the occasional exception, like David Robinson last season, but no longer are you able to grab one or two guys in the draft and immediately win. It's going to take you time. So now we're going to see how GM's patience is. And the other thing that I think I noted as well is we're coming into the timeline from the previous Sim League. So remember that, you know, every year in training camp there are boosts, there are nukes, and so not every player will play exactly the same as they did in the old Sim League, because some of them were boosted, some of them were nerfed. But I think people generally have a baseline idea that have been around for a while and how these guys are going to perform. And anybody who's paying attention can go into the archives and look and see, you know, what a player's career arc looked like. I'm curious to see how many people care about that and how many people don't and how that drives decision making. But, you know, as you're thinking about the draft, also remember that Scott/Ballsohard was manipulating the draft files a little bit to his own personal tastes as far as players go to make things the way he thought they ought to be. That also meant that players debuted at different times because the way that they debut in a default league is when their actual rookie season was, regardless of when they were actually drafted. So be aware that that means that the draft class membership will not be exactly the same. Draft class potentials will not be the same. As far as I can tell, draft class beginning ratings are not the same. It really is based on randomness, as far as I can tell. And so while you can consider a player's potentials as he appears in the rookie draft class of the archives is somewhat indicative of his prime, do not take it as gospel. There's still some uncertainty here. This is not a solved equation. And so as you're making moves in this draft, consider that and making moves for future drafts. I will make one final comment. I think I can tell the way that this draft's value is way down based on the price paid by the Hornets to get the Mavericks pick. It was just a straight 5 points. That seems crazy to me given the price of getting into a draft in past seasons, but maybe given the talent level of this draft, that is correct. So with that, I'm not going to belabor things any longer. I hope everybody has a wonderful 4th of July weekend in the real world. We'll crown a new champion soon if we haven't already. I'll go check that once this pod is over and uploaded. And with that, this is the Cat, and we are out.